raised up more than the other. It had three ribs of the prey in its mouth. The Medo-Persian Empire conquered and overthrew three other empires, Assyria, Babylon, and Egypt. Now the leopard, the swift-striking forces of Alexander the Great, are very well symbolized by the leopard, swift and powerful. The leopard had four wings and four heads. It, in other words, already carried the signs of its being split up on the death of Alexander himself into four separate kingdoms. Four of his chief generals each took over a quarter of Alexander's empire. After this, I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly. And it had great iron teeth. It devoured and broke in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns, which again keys in with these other visions. The dragon had 7 heads and 10 horns, and the beast that John saw rise out of the sea had 7 heads and 10 horns. So, these four beast empires all show similar characteristics, because that's brought out to John. They're all combined in one beast. It was like a leopard, his feet like the feet of a bear, his mouth like the mouth of a lion, and he had the 7 heads and 10 horns. So, you can see now that these four successive Gentile empires were all satanic in their origin and their basic principles. They all had come from the dragon. Now, you find a difference between the vision that John got and the vision that Daniel got, and for a reason. John was given a prophecy of things to come in his day, and carrying down to where the book of Revelation took up. John was not given visions going back into the past and tying it into what had existed before. We're going to see, as we get to the point of tracing these 7 heads, that they represent other empires also, in addition to the four that Daniel's vision had. Now you come to a portion of this thing in Revelation that, again, is often misinterpreted by these one-verse Bible experts whose knowledge of the Bible is limited to hatred of the Catholic Church. And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded unto death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now this one of these 7 heads of the beast, wounded, a seemingly fatal wound, and yet the deadly wound healed. Well, now they are able to see that the one head of the beast they're talking about here was the Roman Empire. And the Western Roman Empire was destroyed, wounded unto death. And they say, however, the power of the papacy developed after that, so that's the healing of the deadly wound of that head. And it's nothing of the sort. It is not a healing of the wound of the old head, because the Roman Empire was not a religious power. It was a political and military power only. And when you get a different and religious power coming up, it is not a healing of the wound of the old one, it is the starting of something new and additional. But we're going to see that the healing of the wound of this head actually occurred, and it's not the power of the papacy. Now, this composite beast rose out of the sea, the whole world mass of non-Israel people, and it showed that they were all essentially the same in their bestial character, violent, brutal, totally lacking in spiritual understanding. Now, the Western Roman Empire, while it maintained the name Roman, and remember that after the capital was moved to Constantinople, that part of it still called itself the Roman Empire. And after the split became total and permanent, and you had two independent empires, the easterly one called itself the Roman Empire, even though it had only the territories of Palestine, Asia Minor, and the Balkans, and the rest of the empire belonged to Rome. Secondly, the Western Empire was not governed from the city of Rome during approximately the last century of its existence. The emperors had moved their capital city part of the time to Milan and part of the time to Ravenna. So the empire is something more than just one city in it, however big and important that city had previously been. Now, the Western Roman Empire received a deadly wound. You remember they were invaded and plundered by the Vandals, who were, by the way, one of the Israel tribes. They were invaded, plundered by the Visigoths in 410 A.D. The Vandals were A.D. 455. The Ostrogoths again conquered them and took over northern Italy in 493. But in the meantime, 476 A.D., the Western Roman Empire came to its official end because one of the invading Germanic tribes, the Heruli, under their king Odovaker, had conquered, and the emperor was such a trivial figure, they didn't even bother killing him. They just told him he was deposed, now go on home. And they sent him down, he had a luxurious villa down in southern Italy, and they sent him home to live as a private citizen. And Odovaker didn't bother taking the title of emperor for himself. He appointed one of his minor officers emperor, and his army elected him king of Italy. So the Roman Empire was dead. It was wounded unto death. And for another three centuries, that's the way it stayed. Now, in the meantime, you had the rise of the papacy, but they didn't restore any empire. The Italians have never been capable of self-government. Each little area would set itself up under a local petty king, and, of course, their petty king had to conquer the neighbors to enlarge his kingdom. And so they fought among themselves all the time. And while the people of the city of Rome did turn to the Pope as someone who might help restore order amid the anarchy, he did not restore an empire. Definitely not. But Charlemagne, king of the Franks, Charlemagne did. He revived the Western Europe, the European Roman Empire. He became first the master of all Gaul, France we'd call it today. Then he conquered and ruled nearly all of Germany. Then Italy, part of Spain, some of the islands in the Mediterranean. So he had restored that Western Roman Empire, in fact, even before the title was given him. In 800 A.D., Pope Leo III crowned him Emperor of the Romans. So you had now a military and political Western Roman Empire restored with even the name. So the deadly wound of the head was healed. That was the first time the Pope had managed to get any king to accept his crown from the Pope, and was the basis for the claim later maintained by the papacy that they had the right to make and unmake kings at will. Then Revelation 13:4, you remember, said they worshiped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? Now, in all this time, the papacy had no armies to speak of, but Charlemagne was a very brilliant general. He overran the Saxon peoples of Germany, the Visigoths of Spain, both of them Israel, I should say, and the turbulent peoples of Italy, including the Israel-Ostrogoths in the north. And he was victorious everywhere. So, as they said, who can make war with this beast empire? Now, that renewed empire, they called it the Holy Roman Empire from the fact that the crown had been bestowed by the Pope. And the successors kept that title of Holy Roman Empire until the year 1806 A.D. So you had here the real healing of the deadly wound. Charlemagne ruled until 810 A.D., a tremendously able man. His successors on the throne were weak and incompetent, and by the year 888, his dynasty finally fizzled out. The last two kings of that dynasty, Charlemagne, from the Latin Carolus Magnus, Charles the Great, but the last two kings of his dynasty were known respectively as Charles the Bald and Charles the Fat, the only things for which they were distinguished. Now, speaking not simply of this one head, but of the beast, this whole composite system of empires, one rising to power as another fell. Revelation 13, verse 5 says, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. Now here is where it is talking about the rise of the papacy. Not the same head that was healed, but a part of the beast system. Well, the papacy, of course, has maintained unquestionably blasphemous claims, indeed. They say that the Pope is the successor to and substitute for Jesus Christ. His official title, what is it, Vicarius Filii Dei, a substitute for the Son of God. Yeah, that's a literal translation of it. One who takes the place of and acts as a substitute for the Son of God. He was the successor to Christ, having taken over all the power of Christ and God. He could, by his own whim, consign anybody to hell, no matter how good he was, or to heaven, no matter how evil he was. Just as the Pope saw fit. In fact, there are certain of the official documents of the Catholic Church, official pronouncements that they put out, which refer to him as the Lord God the Pope. So, certainly it is a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies. And power was given to him to continue for 42 months. Well, the first real consolidation of the power of the Pope came about 606 A.D. And from then on, the power of the papacy continued to rise. The Pope gradually took over a large part of the territory of Italy as the Papal States, which he ruled as an earthly king. But in 1866, 1,260 years after the beginning of the rise of the papacy, it was overthrown, all its territory taken from it, except a few hundred acres left as the Vatican City, and the Pope's claim to be a temporal king were smashed. So his power continued 42 months, which would be 1,260 days, or on the prophetic scale, 1,260 years. And it continues in Revelation, and he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the earth. Another translation of that could be, whose names are not written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the slain Lamb. Now this again, pretty definitely, identifies the papacy. Remember that all European Christianity was gradually brought under the domination of the Catholic Church. It became, as far as any organized church was concerned, the church of all Europe. So, power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. This was true even up into Germany and the Scandinavian countries and England. It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Yes, Protestantism, you remember, was stamped out in bloody massacres over a period of several centuries, until finally the last trace of any attempt at organized Protestant religion had vanished by 1514. So he made war with them and overcame them. Now, it doesn't mean that there were no Protestants alive, but it does mean that they didn't dare have any organized church services. They had their own secret beliefs, but they didn't dare talk about it. Then, Revelation 13, verses 9 and 10. If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and faith of the saints. The Catholic Church, over this period of 12 centuries, had murdered a great many million Protestants. There were at least two Protestants burned to death for heresy in Italy in the year 1866, that late. Now, no records were kept of how many were murdered in these various massacres, so estimates are all that can be made. And I've seen estimates running as high as 40 million Protestants murdered by the Catholic Church over that period. And, of course, a great many others imprisoned.
The Dark Ages result from that kind of thing?
Yes, I would say. Trying to stamp out everything but Catholicism. Now, you remember that Napoleon was an outgrowth of the French Revolution. He started as an officer in the communist army. But he saw what utter chaos and confusion their silly communism was. And a very capable man, he had the backing of the army. Because of some brilliant military victories, they put him in military command and gave him high office, and then with the backing of the army, he declared himself Emperor of the French. Communism was ended and displaced, and then he started out on a general conquest to extend his empire as far as he could. Among other places, he took over Italy, and he took a lot of the papal states, the territory that the Pope had ruled. The Pope excommunicated him for this, so Napoleon put the Pope under arrest and threw him in jail and kept him there until the Pope signed a treaty acknowledging that the territories Napoleon had taken rightfully belonged to Napoleon. The Pope, you know, had tried to pull this stunt of granting the crown to Napoleon. He was there at the ceremony ready to place the crown on Napoleon's head. Napoleon seized it out of the Pope's hands and put it on his own head. He wasn't going to acknowledge that he got any power from the Pope, and he didn't. So, he that leads into captivity has to go into captivity. He that killed with the sword must be killed with the sword. And you note that in the wars, that period of wars that started then, beginning with the French Revolution and following, you had frightful wars in the basically Catholic countries, the Latin countries of Europe, in which the slaughter was terrific. The patience and faith of the saints, they realized that the triumphs the Pope was making at the time were not permanent, that he too was going to be overthrown. Well, this brings us to the point where we're about to start on another and bigger phase of this, much too big to cover tonight. So we might as well break it at this point. Anybody?